You're listening to the Franchise Podcast Network, presented by Lucky Star Casino. KRXO FM and KRXO HD Oklahoma City, a product of Tyler Media, reaching over 1 million Oklahomans every week. Now, the Outdoor Hour, giving you the inside scoop on the great outdoors on 107.7 The Franchise.
As long as I can remember, I've been drawn to the outdoors. There's something primal in each of us that awakens when we step outside the bounds of modern society and back into the vast possibilities of the natural world. The more civilized our lives become, the louder our hearts cry for reconnection with our native ways. Failure is imminent, dangers drawing nigh, but approached with reverence and tact, the outdoors return wisdom and gain. In both the outdoors and in life, harvests are fleeting, but lessons and memories abound. With that in mind, we step forth boldly together in pursuit of ourselves outdoors. We are nothing more than tree stand troubadours. Welcome inside the Outdoor Hour. Bittersweet day. Real bittersweet day.
It's rough. I cried a little bit. I got guys pinging me right now up north, sitting on public land, trying to drag me out for the last night hunt.
We got...
one of them's literally right now... not right now, but you know,
today
he's surrounded by 24 does, man. While he's texting me like, hey,
is he waiting on
bro?
A buck?
Yeah, he was out of town I think for most of hunting season, and now he's back in Oklahoma, so he's really trying to soak it up.
It's bittersweet. Obviously it's the last day of deer season here in Oklahoma, and I didn't hunt very much this year. I think I sat... I'm actually embarrassed to say this.
Don't
out
say
loud.
It out loud.
I sat a fraction of the number of times.
See, that's good.
That yeah. I normally would.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair.
I'm embarrassed to admit that I took a shot this year.
You did.
Yeah, as did you.
Yep. It was listen. There's been some victories this year in my outdoor life, and but the humbling events outnumber the victories this year, and I think that's probably a good thing. And but yeah, humbling.
I think it's that way more often than not. We get
apparently
we in the social media age get so used to seeing these highlight reels of how many people are killing big bucks every single day.
Or that dude with his pile on Oklahoma Archery or whatever that was that you sent me just goes out for an evening sit and just...
Can I ask maybe a stupid question or make me seem stupid?
Yeah, go ahead.
So if I was to realistically start hunting next year, like if I got a deer, would that provide for me and my girl for meat for a year, or would I have to get two?
Depends the size, and then depends what you do with it, right?
Yeah.
So
what if I just like take it to some processor or whatever and have them break it down for me? And
yeah, I mean, depending on how much you turn into sausage, depending on how much you turned into ground, again, the size of the deer is going to play a significant role in that.
Even something like shot placement.
Yeah, shot placement, not losing meat, edible meat,
yeah,
because your placement is correct. And then also, how often do you want to eat it? Right?
Yeah.
If you're eating it every day, no.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, obviously.
Yeah.
But, like, just what would you, like, a general for two people? Like, you were like, oh, this is what we were going to ration out or something like that. Is there, like, a... Yeah, I don't need an exact estimate. I just want
to
ballpark.
I know people that shoot six deer a year and need to. Because they fill their four doe tags and their two buck tags, and that's what their family eats.
Okay.
And that's a family of four or five. So,
sure.
You know, I think two people, if you're eating it, let's say you ate it once a week, man, two deer would cover you. You know, if the shot placement was good, they were decent-sized deer.
So I'm probably going to need five.
I think the number that in Oklahoma currently, because who knows if that's going to stay the same. But the number currently in Oklahoma, I think, is accurate in two ways. One, biologically, meaning our herd health and population. And two, that's the amount that, you know, really help feed a family. We don't have moose. We don't have elk. We don't, well, you know, most people aren't getting elk in Oklahoma. Your mule deer options are limited. We have limited, you know, we have a one bird turkey. So if you really want to live off a wild game in Oklahoma, your diet's going to be pretty heavy in venison.
There is, I don't even know where we're at in the process of this. There is legislation being discussed to change the limit for at least bucks in the state of Oklahoma. That's something we can talk about today.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of that, so I'd love the education if you've been tracking that. I haven't been kind of disconnected from that.
I will say I haven't done a whole lot of, like, legitimate research
but
on
Facebook
it.
Told
I've
you?
I've done a lot of social media searching on this
Facebook
one.
Facebook told you? love that.
I feel like good. All of our cell phones should come with monocles at this point. And whenever you go into detective mode, you just put on that monocle.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
See? Boom. Yeah.
It's like that that new show with, oh, God, darn it, the dude from Cheers, Ted Danson?
Oh, yeah, the Inside Man or Man Inside,
Inside Man.
Whatever it is. Yeah. I watched the first episode. It was pretty good.
I liked it, but every time he put his pocket square in, he was in detective mode, undercover mode.
Definitely got to have an on switch for everything,
dude,
in your life.
You gotta switch the mind.
I mean,
dude.
Stallone and Over the Top, he wasn't ready to arm wrestle until he flipped that hat
boy.
Around. And
that's
then
right.
You knew it was go.
And then you knew
time.
It was go time.
Yep. Same thing with Ash Ketchum, Pokemon. I mean, come on.
You lost me on that one.
Hey, Pokemon is outdoors.
I don't even know what any of that means.
I knew I
means.
Would get you guys with that.
Yeah. You know, I know the Pokemon Go during COVID got so many people outdoors, and I think a lot of, like, national parks and things like that really embraced it. Just
oh, yeah,
reach
they would have
a different group.
Gym meetups and stuff outside in the parks, and, like, people would show up. Yeah. They were getting mad at one because they charged people money to show up, and then other people were just standing outside the barrier and doing it for free and stealing all of the Wi-Fi, and so the people that paid to go in, like, couldn't do anything.
That's what I hate when I go to a national park and the Wi-Fi is not up to par.
I think this was actually in, like, a city somewhere at, like, a Scissor Tail Park or something
that sounds
like that.
Sounds like a problem with people who don't have Starlink
Anyways,
integrated into their...
Now that I've derailed the show again...
Yeah, why don't we introduce it?
Yeah.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. I don't know why, but I'm kind of nervous this week.
Yeah.
I feel like I walked into something a few minutes ago that...
Yeah, I would just let it go.
Are we going to do it?
Yeah.
Full send?
Always.
This is the Outdoor Hour. I'm Taylor Maples.
I asked him if he did it, and he said...
I just shot a bear.
I asked him again, and again he said...
I just shot a bear. I did!
A master.
Thank you.
Are there regional... Can we submit goldfish for, like, a regional Emmy? Because I think we should.
Hey, I'm there for it. As long as the people know, that's all that matters to me. I watched My Cousin Vinny over the break. I love that movie. Fantastic. But that was from the courtroom.
The courtroom scene. Yeah.
That's tremendous. Thank you. I applaud you again.
Thank you. Thank you.
Next to me... The handsome gentleman in the cardigan is Joshua Wildman Stratton.
Wildman Stratton.
Yep, it's solid.
I do love that you've stepped up your dress the last few weeks. You got the hat today.
I do. If
that's your signature look now.
Make a, you know, it'd be great if the headphones,
the cameras,
hit, you
were
know?
Flipped correctly.
Yeah,
yeah,
it'd be.
That's a really good look.
It is. My favorite part is the fly that
I didn't realize that was
Riley.
A fly. Let me see this.
Made.
What is this here?
Riley made it. Who works at JD Adams and Company?
Nice.
Riley DeLong.
Cool.
Great fly tire. And someone had hit him up to make some for
like corsages for,
yeah, for a wedding.
Yeah.
And he posted a picture of it, and I was like, man, you should, I'd love for you to make one of those for my cowboy hats. Which then a bunch of other people responded to my comment that said, yeah, I'd take one. And, yeah, man, super cool.
That's awesome. Good for you. The mastermind on the ones and twos behind the glass, the one and only Matty Goldfish.
Always baked and extra cheesy.
I love the goldfish.
Classic.
So classic.
I'm going to update that one too soon.
I think it needs a refresh.
I haven't had any good inspiration. And don't just do something to do it. Do it because you feel creative.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
That's my ethos.
Thoughts from Goldfish.
You just stepped into Goldfish's bowl.
Thought from the bowl.
Can't decide if I love that or hate that. But
I think we should definitely add a segment of this week's thought from the fishbowl.
This week's thought from Goldfish's fishbowl. Be careful what bears you shoot, Taylor, because they could fall on you and kill you.
Out of the tree.
Is there a story on that?
Yes, there is.
You didn't see
is.
That a couple weeks ago?
No.
Yes.
You shot a bear, it fell out of the tree, landed on him, killed him.
No.
Yes, it was in Virginia, and it was like a dad, his son, and a couple of their friends. They were out in a hunting party, and he has hunted bears before, so they knew what they were doing.
Yeah, they had dogs with them and everything.
Yeah, so they chased the bear up the tree, and they shot it and killed it. And it fell out of the tree and landed on the dude. And they tried to do, like, life-saving measures on him there. Ambulance showed up, and then he ended up dying in the hospital a couple days later.
Man, there's always more to every story. I'm sure we don't know all the details, but that kind of seems avoidable, right?
Situational awareness?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Know where you're standing?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like if a tree falls on you and you're
directly under the tree that's falling?
I want to make a joke, but I'm not.
Okay. Is it not radio friendly, Goldfish?
I mean, I'm sure it is, but
it's not considerate for the loss of life?
Yes.
Okay, got it. Good.
I'm a considerate soul.
Thank you.
I do appreciate that about you. It is the last day of deer season here in Oklahoma, and we are clearly not sitting in a tree stand. You mentioned it was humbling this year. I think it's always humbling in the outdoors. We should tell some stories. We should talk a little bit about the lessons we've learned and do some of those things that we talk about every week in the intro to this show. So I'm going to give you a second, gather your thoughts, put you on the hot seat here.
Let's go.
When we come back, this is the Outdoor Hour on 107.7 The Franchise.
You're listening to The Outdoor Hour with your host Taylor Maples and Josh Stratton on 107.7 The Franchise.
Welcome back inside The Outdoor Hour. Stay hot this week.
Stay hot.
Stay frosty.
Are on, boys.
Situational awareness.
The mics
are
on.
To tie back to last segment.
Situational awareness. It is the last day of deer season. Congratulations. We made it through another year. I hope you bagged a big buck this year. I hope you filled a freezer. I hope you had a wonderful time in the outdoors. I truly did enjoy the deer season, although I sat many, many fewer times this year than I have each of the last couple of years. And I knew it was going to be that way. You know, I've got a 2-year-old at home now and another on the way in the next few weeks. So just the opportunities and the priority has changed a lot for me in the last calendar year.
Let's tell them the real reason.
What is the real reason?
Saltwater fly fishing. let's call it what it is. You can be the great dad, husband. You can play that card if you want. But for the rest of us that really know you, the guy has an addiction.
I traded one for another, maybe.
I think that's fair. I think you could also add that the addition of a drift boat in your life with a growing addiction to saltwater fishing really limits the opportunities for hunting.
I hate how right you are. When you're speaking to my wife, please, let's go with the first story.
100%.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Rachel, when you listen to this episode, remember when you talk
Yes,
to
please.
Taylor's wife about this.
Yeah, when Sam is in the room, it's because I'm a good dad and my great priorities
dad.
Are different, which is true. I'm a good dad, I
you
think.
Are? I think that's fair.
And the priorities are different.
I think also true.
It's just maybe a little bit more drift boat and saltwater heavy than it ever has
I
been.
I would also like to add that you're, from what I can tell, you're a great husband.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're
I
welcome.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. You're welcome.
I would echo those sentiments for you. Rachel,
just one
you
bald guy to another. I think you're doing a great job at life. I think you're winning.
This has taken a weird twist and turn here. No, definitely the fishing. I've spent more time, energy, money on that this year than I ever have before, and that's easy to do for sure. But I really enjoyed my sits this year. I think I just had a different outlook deer hunting because I knew it was going to be fewer sits and further between. I didn't pattern deer the way I typically would. I didn't spend as much money on corn and cameras and that kind of stuff. You could say it was more of a, I don't know, old school is not the right word, like almost au naturel type approach to deer hunting. I never went into the woods killing this year. It wasn't like, hey, I know this deer is going to be here and I'm going to go get him the way you hear some guys talk about it. And I felt that way in the past. This year for me, it was a lot more about just embracing the opportunity to get away from the stress of everyday life, get out into the woods. I sat on the ground once and tried to get a little Western on some whitetail, just chasing him around the property. Had a couple of different stands that I sat in this year that I've never been in before. So just surveying our property in different ways from different vantage points. And I snuck you out there too.
Yeah. Believe it or not, like, I don't know what our listeners think, but we don't really hunt and fish together.
We tried to count this week. It's probably been four times maybe in the several years we've done this that you and I've been outside of this building together.
Yeah. So it was great to spend some consecutive or, you know, multiple days with you at your lease. That was great. Now we just have to go chase some saltwater together.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm into that.
We mentioned this in the opening segment. It's easy, I think, to get disgruntled and frustrated as a deer hunter in the modern world because social media makes it so easy to see the successes of your peers. I've been very transparent through this Outdoor Hour journey over the last three seasons that I don't know half of what I want to know, but I've got a community of outdoorsmen that I put a lot of stock in, their opinions and their thoughts and their practices, and it has really helped broaden my horizons. I know guys that deer hunt and bow hunt, and they'll sit like 80 times in a season or more, and they'll go years and years without even drawing back their bow. I don't always agree with some of the non-shot decisions that are made in the interest of growing big deer. I know people that, like we said, eat exclusively venison, and I know people that don't like eating deer meat and try to pawn off the meat from the animals they do harvest onto guys like me that'll take it. So it's interesting what really how much variance there is in the local community, but man, you go online. Are you even a part of these groups? Do you?
Negative.
You don't.
Negative.
You don't pay attention to like the Oklahoma bow hunters, no. Or the deer hunters of no. Oklahoma, or any of these.
No.
It's amazing. Literally, you the picture of the pile. That guy went out, and it was like one buck, and it was a good buck, and I think three does in a single sit. Goldfish. If you're going to get into bow hunting, that's more deer than I've ever killed. And that dude did it in literally probably a 2 hour stretch of time. Unbelievable.
He is going to have one hell of a story for the rest of his life, and nobody's going to believe him.
He should come on the Outdoor Hour and tell it.
Yeah.
Yes.
You should hit him up.
Hey, if that was you, I could find you because I sent Josh a screenshot.
We have his name.
You carry conversation. I'm going to call him out right now.
Okay, cool. Well, it was an interesting year for me because I wasn't traveling as much as I normally do out west, and so I was here. which I thought was going to convert to a lot more days hunting in Oklahoma. It did not. But I did make a commitment to really trying to improve at archery hunting and to go all in on that. It's a sport that I have been hesitant to get into in years past, purely because I believe it takes a lot of time and dedication to be proficient at it. And the last thing I want to do is injure an animal that I can't find, or you know, just not have the proper placement. And there's so many variables that play into archery hunting. And this year I felt like I was ready. I felt like I had put in the time, and so I went for it, and you know, didn't pan out like I wanted it to, other than I learned a lot more, and still have a lot to learn, which is great. I think that's the exciting part about it. But yeah, man, it's a different beast.
It's an impossible game to master. You're always the away team, I think, when you go out, especially bow hunting. These animals are so good at getting away and winning and changing patterns and doing things. But yeah, it's very humbling to get out there. You put a ton of work in the off season. You shot your bow. You didn't shoot more than anybody I know. Like, there's always room for growth in these areas, right? But you put time in, you shot your bow. We did get together and shoot on more than one occasion.
Yep. Got 3D targets set up at my house.
Yep.
Shot. One thing I didn't do, which I think was a major player, is I didn't shoot from elevated positioning.
I wonder how many people do that. I would love to hear, listeners, if you can hit us up on social media at @outdoor_hour. What is your practice like in the off season? Are you shooting from elevated surfaces? Do you have a tree stand somewhere that you'll actually shoot at a target from? Or are you just shooting at ground level? What adjustments are you making? That sort of thing. Because that's become a conversation you and I are having recently.
Yeah, I mean, I know that, you know, like Oklahoma City Gun Club, they have an elevated platform for one of their archery courses. I know of guys, particularly guys who hunt out of saddles, will often practice out of the saddle. And I don't know why I thought, oh, I better do this, other than there's not a tree at my house I could have done it on.
I think in a lot of areas, if you think it helps, it does. So that goes back to my baseball days. There's a lot of routines and superstitions that athletes and specifically baseball players will go through, and I carry some of that same mindset into my bow hunting. If you think that having a specific scent cover helps you, then buy it and use it. If you think that shooting from an elevated platform in the summer is going to help you, if nothing else, it's going to give you more repetitions and it's going to give you more confidence when the time comes to connect in the field in the fall. And that's all beneficial. I did hang a tree stand. I've got a little hang-on stand in my front yard that I can shoot over the fence into the backyard. But where my target sits, based on the backdrop, the natural hill backdrop that I use for a backstop, I'm almost shooting level still, even when I'm elevated. It's not like I'm 12 feet up in the air shooting down. But that's not something that's really ever bothered me. If that's something that you want to be more confident in, by all means, man, I think it's a good idea.
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely adding it to the practice repertoire, shooting out of the tree. Just the angles are different, and you know, that compressed shooting lane and all of those things that are, you know, just dramatically different than, you know, 40, 60 yards standing flat-footed looking at a 3D elk target, you know?
Yeah, and I think one of the things that always gets me, in our last sit together, I was complaining about this via text to you. I don't even know how to describe this, really. The claustrophobia at times that can set in if you're sitting in a stand I don't know, maybe some people set their own stands and still feel this way, but if I'm sitting in a stand that I didn't hang, oftentimes I get there and I wish that branch wasn't there, and I wish they would have angled it a little bit more this way. I find myself oftentimes having to make adjustments to shoot based on things that I feel like are within our control as a hunter. Whether it's how wide my feet can get because I'm sitting in a single seat ladder stand versus a two-man stand. If it's, man, this shot is angled so, you know, the planned shooting lane is at 12 o'clock, but I wish it was at like 9 or 10 o'clock so that it sets up more for a right-handed bow shot. Lots of little things like that that I think we all can do a better job of preparing in the off season. If you know that stand is where I want to hunt and it's a single stand instead of a double stand, practice shooting with your feet closer together, you know? Twist yourself. The shot that I got to take on a doe a couple of weeks ago and missed was basically twisting back all the way behind me. You know, if you're thinking 12 o'clock is straight ahead in the stand, this shot was back at like 7 o'clock. It was a pretty awkward angle to take a shot. It was a good lane. The deer was in the right position. Like, I would take that shot again, but man, that's not a position I practice shooting out of, and maybe we should think about that more.
Yeah, I definitely plan on it. You know, particularly those are all things you practice. Prone, standing, kneeling, sticks, no sticks, you know, handheld, resting up on your bag, all those things are stuff that I practice when it comes to shooting distance with my rifle and getting ready for a hunting season with my rifle. And I didn't do any of those potential elements when it came to getting ready for a bow season. And I'm, you know, my takeaway was I'm still very naive and young in this sport, and those are things that I need to be doing if I want to be confident to do to be successful in the field. So also takeaway was, you know, when I was watching, you know, 15 deer at 240 yards away for like 45 minutes going, this sucks. Like, there's nothing I can do about this. Yes. It took everything with most of my hunting being more of a spot and stock situation. It took literally everything inside of me every time I sat to not get out of the tree and be like, I saw where he went. I should just loop around and see if I can, you know. But everything that I've heard about hunting smaller leases is that's just, there's not much success there. And that you just need to wait. And so despite what my inner exploratory ADD mind was telling me, I sat there.
A.K.A. Wild Man.
A.K.A. Wild Man. I sat there and just watched. But it was super fun, you know. I think that it's always wonderful to be an observer in nature when they literally have no idea you're there. And so it was fun to watch them come out of their bed and wake up for the day and just do what they do. And to be able to do that for, you know, almost an hour. And I think knowing that I was the only person on the lease too was super rad, knowing like I'm the only one seeing this right now and just sitting in that moment and knowing that I was witnessing something that maybe no one else, literally no one else on planet Earth was seeing right then. And that was super fun.
You know who would enjoy that sentiment of the comment you just made?
Who?
That very much was a Todd Lisenby thing.
Oh, yeah?
When he was producing the Outdoor Hour. No offense, Goldfish, but you're not even listening.
What? Huh? No, I love Todd.
That was one of the things.
Todd's one of my homies.
He used to say all the time was, I love being like, you know, fishing and thinking I'm the only person on Earth that's seeing this view this time.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're totally right about that. It is a very different style of hunting.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that not only being in a tree stand, but also having a bow in your hand compared to a rifle or even a crossbow really opens up some different opportunities. You have to commit yourself to the long game and the process of it.
Patience. Patience. You're definitely living on their time, you know. Rifle hunting, they've got to be there, but they don't have to do all the right things.
in a bow hunt, they have to do all the right
things. And then you have to do all the right things.
And I think that's often the hardest part, right? And that's what makes it so maddening is you'll be in the spot, the deer will do all the right things, it just feels like it's going to come together, and then you screw something up. Hey, I didn't check my level, which is not something I pay a lot of attention to, by the way. I very much obviously use the sight pins, but I cannot consciously tell you I've ever checked my left to right level on my sight in the field ever. Maybe it's a muscle memory thing because I do pay attention to it when I'm practicing.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I will tell because, you know, I think going back to like that last sit, which was that morning when I saw all those deer, I do want to tell, like, share a part of that experience that day that was incredibly rewarding and eye-opening.
I'm going to make us take a break. And then we'll do that when we get back. Trust me, you're going to want to hear this. You're listening to the Outdoor Hour on 107.7 The Franchise.
Now back to the Outdoor Hour with your hosts Taylor Maples and Josh Stratton on 107.7 The Franchise.
Welcome back inside the Outdoor Hour. Final segment this week as we kind of put a bow on deer season in Oklahoma. It is the final day of archery deer here. We were both unsuccessful this year, Josh.
This is true.
We both learned a lot this year, Josh.
We did.
Tell us a little bit about, you didn't sit a ton this year, but I know you poured yourself a little bit more into archery. And I think you're pretty fired up about some of the things you've experienced and what it's going to mean for your future.
Yeah, I'm really excited about next season for sure. I'm excited about the off season. I'm excited about continuing to grow and learn and become more proficient and confident with a bow. But one of the things that stood out on the last day for me, my last sit was, I'll be honest, and I'm sure every hunter has been there, but I just felt like, man, it wasn't going to happen. I had been for like 3 hours watching these deer move from they were in front of me by about 230 yards to then they went into the woods and then they crossed south of me of this valley at about 230 yards and went into the woods. And I was like, man, they're just not, they're not going to come and I'm not going to get a deer this year. And so I did the only thing that I knew to do in that moment, which was, I just started praying, like audibly, and as I'm in this situation and praying, like, God, just bring me something. And at this point, I thought I had counted correctly, and that every deer that I saw in the morning had already crossed the valley and gone into the woods. And as I'm doing this, deer start coming out of the woods and they look like they're going to head to the same spot that the other deer had gone and crossed the creek and vanished for probably the rest of my time sitting. And as I'm sitting there praying and just like, Lord, like provide and, you know, create an opportunity for me to harvest something. They all just turned about face and like on a frozen rope just start almost trotting directly towards me, the whole group of them, and not a single deer had done that all morning. They were headed in the same path, and that may sound like nonsense or crazy to some people or whatever, but man, it was, though there was no harvest. And I think I said this to you, that it was, I felt bad that I wasn't able to honor the situation that was presented to me and being successful in that moment. And, that's something that like, I probably will carry with me for a long time of like, because there's no explanation for why these deer did this. There's no explanation for the fact that all of them turned and that, like, they just stopped doing anything normal. I didn't release a scent. A feeder didn't go off. There, nothing. And they just all turned almost in unison and just hummed it to 35 yards in front of the stand and stopped. And, like, that's unreal. To me, that's just this totally unreal thing. And it was fulfilling in a faith way. It was fulfilling in, like, a soul way, even though I wasn't successful, even though, and I think for me, that's probably one of the things, and this happened to me in Venice, Louisiana. You know, like, I was seeking a specific fish, a specific size of a fish, to the point that I know this sounds like silly stuff to pray for, but, like, I was, and it showed up, right? And so even though I wasn't successful in catching that fish, again, operator error on that one, an operator error in the deer woods, but you know, maybe all I say all that maybe to say that, like, the lesson and the takeaway is that if I continue to faithfully seek and to faithfully serve, that if I do my part, then God's going to continue to create opportunities for me to have that. And my part is getting better. My part is humbly admitting where I have shortcomings. My part is being a faithful steward to the art and the way of life of hunting and fishing. And if I continue to pursue that and I do that humbly, then maybe the Lord will continue to create opportunities. And one of these times, it's successful.
I love that story for a lot of reasons. The concept of stewardship that you mentioned is a big piece of it. Everybody's got their own positions and perspectives on the direct connection of prayer specifically in relationship with God, whatever that looks like in your life and the impact that may have on your hunt. But obviously there was something that happened to you in the moment. You were overcome by, you know, your beliefs and I mean, I've prayed in the field before.
And to know? Be clear, I've prayed in the field and nothing's shown up, yeah. too, you know? Like, let's keep it real. But it really did feel like there was something divine in that moment. And, yeah, I will remember that hunt for a magnitude of reasons. But my hope is that I remember that hunt for that faith-affirming moment, not for the miss.
And I think that's such a valuable lesson for all of us, regardless of whether the concept of your faith resonates with you as a listener. It's process, right? What you fell in love with about that hunt had absolutely nothing to do with whether or not you harvested an animal, and had everything to do with, man, I have poured myself into this endeavor and into this sport for the last few months. And I have worked to develop my skills, and I've put myself in a situation for things to even begin to go in a particular way. And, oh, by the way, they did. You know, it goes to show you, Goldfish, you're talking about maybe just even hypothetically getting into hunting. Like, that's such a cool story because it illustrates how quickly these sort of things can come. The times that I've sat in the field for hours and hours and hours and hours without seeing a single thing, and then it's like all of a sudden, bam, you're covered up with deer. Like, yeah, you can go from shooting no deer to shooting four deer in a matter of a couple of minutes. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I've been out once with one of my buddies, and we sat and we literally saw nothing that entire day. And then we went out the next day and saw nothing the entire day until right at the very end. And then I was like, oh! And he was like, don't point, you idiot. I was like, oh, my bad, sorry. Yeah. We've been here for 2 days. That was the first thing I saw. I was excited, all right? Leave me alone.
It's hard, man. It is, and I feel for Josh because And I know he had to run on to the next thing, but it is so humbling because we spend a lot of time and energy and muscle, and a lot of us make this our personality. You know, like, we devote everything to this as a sport, and it doesn't care. The game don't care. We talk about that in sports all the time.
Yeah,
right?
For hunters, you guys are very easy to spot out in the wild. You guys might need to work on that a little bit. You're just saying.
Yeah, we make it our personality, and, you know, it's the last day of deer season. I'm clearly here doing this. I'm not out deer hunting today. I have to sit for the next however many months, 9 months, whatever it is, until deer season starts again, replaying the shot that I missed, the opportunities that I had, the chances maybe I didn't take. You know, there's a couple of deer over the last 4 or 5 years that, for lack of a better word, still kind of haunt me because, man, I didn't try to shoot that deer and I never had another opportunity the rest of the season. And to sit here and have to spend the next 9 months just stewing on that is one thing. But also to be in a situation, and there's many of us out there, I know I'm not alone in this. There are many of us that, like Josh said, had operator error this year. And man, we've now got 9 months to stew on that, to try to clean some things up. You know what kills me, though? This is always makes me laugh. Everybody, and if you say this doesn't apply to you, you're lying. Everybody that's a deer hunter is going to go buy something between now and the start of next deer season that's going to fix their problem.
100%. That's why there's an industry.
It reminds me of the golf movie Tin Cup.
Oh, yes.
You know, where he's got all the junk that's hanging off of his head and all this. Like, we're all like this. And for some of us, it's going to be we're going to purchase a new saddle because I don't like hunting out of a ladder stand anymore. For some of it's a different camo pattern. It's just hilarious. And if you were to go to any of, you know, the big box outdoor stores, like, in the next week, I guarantee there are people already saying, here's what I'm going to do differently. I'm going to shoot a different bow. I'm going to buy different arrows. I've always used a thumb release, and now I'm going to go to, you know, something off the wrist with my index trigger finger. Or, like, people are going to go ahead and just make that switch today.
Who is more superstitious, your average hunter or your average head coach of any sports team?
Man.
Tough question, isn't it?
That's tough. I'm going to probably say your average hunter.
That's kind of where I was going to lean to. And sorry, head coaches, if you're out there, you guys are crazy.
Yeah. And here's why I say that, because I feel like head coaches can prepare enough to gain confidence.
Well, and you're also preparing against something that can think, and so you can think on the same page. You're going against a wild animal. Who knows what that wild animal is going to do in any given situation?
Yeah.
So it's not like you can prepare for any specific moment. You know what I mean? It was like you guys are saying, I just need to start shooting in weird spots and building up that muscle memory to do it. Do you think, I'm sure this exists out there now, and maybe we talked about this a couple weeks ago or a couple months ago when we were talking about, like, the technology aspect of it, but do they have, like, that full 3D setup like the Golf League started doing for archery, where you could literally just set up the 3D, have your actual bow there and pull back and shoot, like, and it, you wouldn't actually be shooting an arrow, but with the technology, I would 100%.
Yeah, there's like video games, more like virtual reality kind of stuff that you can do that. People take it to the extreme, though. Like, honestly, I know I literally have a tree stand in my yard, so I can go out there and shoot as realistic. Front yard, shooting into my backyard just because of, you know, where the natural, like, backstop is for me to shoot an arrow. If I missed a target, you know, I don't want to be sending an arrow across the street where a neighbor kid might be playing. There's a lot of consideration taken into where do I want to shoot an arrow that my HOA is going to be the most okay with.
You just go hang out in your stand sometimes. Need to get away. No comment, plead the fifth. Sorry.
No comments
I'll erase this last 5 seconds back.
Yeah, please. No, I literally do. I have gone and sat there before.
Hey, I'm the youngest of six. I used to hide in the bathroom. because that was the only place that nobody else could mess with me.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of dads today that feel that same way. Yeah,
100%, man. Maybe that's where I learned it.
That's awesome. It is a bittersweet day. It's the last day of deer season here in Oklahoma.
What's the next big one up?
Turkey.
So there's two different turkey seasons?
Yeah, good
one
question.
One spring?
Correct. Yeah, okay. There's a spring and there's a fall. Spring is, I think, typically what people think of for turkey season. And I'm going to get this wrong. I think it's April 15th in Oklahoma through May 15th. I can't remember if it's March to April or April to May, but I think it's April 15th through
May 15th.
Are
there anything that you're allowed to hunt in the summer months, or is it all just fishing stuff
mostly? It depends. There's a couple of, like, we talk, you know, periodically about falconry. You know, there's quite a barrier to entry there of getting into falconry because you have to go through the licensing and all that. But there is actually in Oklahoma today a year-round season for falconry.
Oh, nice. So you just send your falcon out to go hunt the stuff, or you're hunting falcons?
You are using your falcon to go hunt. I need to get you on one of these trips.
Yes, dude, because I'm 100% about this. So I will teach a falcon things.
It's something you would probably...
I will be the falcon guy, no joke.
You would, honestly, like, you'd probably be a great fit for this community. It's such awesome people.
So they're weird. AKA, if you guys didn't pick up on that, they're weird individuals, but I'm there for it.
It is an eclectic group of people.
Yes, exactly. Yes. It's like audio engineers.
Sure.
Eclectic group of people.
Sure. I love them, though. It is so cool. I've met a number of... There are 130 licensed falconers in the state of Oklahoma. Ballpark, I've talked to some people that know this. I don't just pull this out of thin air. It sounds like I just knew this off the top of my head here.
He did go with the Falcon guys a couple weeks ago, so it's fresh.
I did. It's fresh. There's 130 licensed falconers in the state of Oklahoma. You could make an argument that 15 of those are not actively practicing. There's probably another 10 to 15 that are dead, honestly, that their license is just still active because it hasn't expired. So if you were to say there's 100 active falconers out there, I probably know 10% of the active license holders.
That's what they need to start putting on the Ocho, dude. Some falconry competitions? Man, if we have dog shows on TV, why don't we have falcon competitions?
You see the drone racing that they do around 100%. Stadiums and stuff?
We could keep up with them now? Dude.
That'd be really cool.
We're pitching this.
I need to get you out, though. So there are people locally. There's about 100 active, if you were to say, around the state, give or take, that will capture, and we don't even have time for me to get into this full explanation, but capture or purchase from, like, you know, captive-raised birds, train them, and hunt with them. So depending on the type of bird, you know, sometimes you'll send a falcon up and it'll just circle around. And then when it sees a duck or something, it'll stoop down at 130 miles an hour and just smoke it out of the sky.
And then you train it to bring it back to you?
Pretty much.
That is the dopest thing ever. I'm sorry.
Pretty much.
I had to go to 90s terminology. That's how cool it is.
Yeah. No, it is a rad experience to witness. We need to get you out there. We'll make that happen. Hey, we are starting to get up against the clock here. Thank you guys for being with us. It has been so fun the last few months to hear from so many of you on social media. I've been approached at church by people that have listened to the show. Thank you guys for doing that. Drop us a note on social media. You can find us at outdoor_hour on TikTok, Twitter, Instagram. You can find us on YouTube. If you're not watching the YouTube videos, you're listening to the podcast, or you're listening live on air each week, there's a lot of different ways that you can find us. Check out the Franchise OK social media as well to find the Outdoor Hour. I'm Taylor Maples, T_Maples on social media. Joshua Wildman Stratton is at @against_current. That's Maddie Goldfish. This is the Outdoor Hour. Thanks for being with us. Until then, go boldly. We'll see you outdoors.